How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Daily replays, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network. iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, the list goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Very, very busy weekend. We've had some quiet weekends. Certainly not this one. Biggest upset in UFC history occurred last night when Holly Holm in the second round knocked out Ronda Rousey in what was not a Matt Serra GSP finish. Holly Holm won the first round. Holly Holm outfought. She was the better fighter. She beat up and finished Ronda Rousey for the first time in Ronda Rousey's mixed martial arts career. Holly Holm, the new UFC 135-pound champion. We're going to be talking about this historic moment on the show here today. Huge victory for Holly Holm. What is next for Ronda Rousey? Will she have a fight with Cyborg? Will they do an immediate rematch? When might that take place? What's up in the meantime for Holly Holm? So much stuff to talk about coming out of last night's UFC event. A story covered in the New York Times, the AP, every sports outlet imaginable. One of the top stories in the world last night was Ronda Rousey losing to Holly Holm. We'll talk about that on the program today. Plus, pro wrestling news, the death of one of the all-time greats, Nick Bockwinkel, passed away yesterday at about 8 o'clock p.m. We'll talk about the career of Nick Bockwinkel and everything else that is going on in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll open up the phone lines for you, your thoughts, your memories of Nick Bockwinkel, Ronda Rousey, and so much more. We'll kick it off after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. What a crazy weekend here on the show. So much stuff to talk about here today. Ronda Rousey, Nick Bockwinkel. Raw resumes tomorrow with all of the crew back in the United States after a trip to Europe on a very scary weekend internationally as well. Mike, what's going on?
Well, a lot of stuff. And not only that, the Genichiro Tenryu retirement show, which also took place
early
on this morning, North American time.
That's right. I hadn't even had a chance. I wanted to watch it last night, and then we ended up going about an hour and a half on the Observer Radio, and I was hoping to watch at least the main event and the Minoru Suzuki tag match, but then immediately when the show was over, we received word that Nick Bockwinkel had passed away. So we did another show there, and I think I'm going to try and get Vinny to watch it with me tonight, at least those two matches. How much of that show have you seen?
The entire show.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
all right.
I had a chance to see the whole thing.
Okay, we'll talk about that later on, but we got to talk about the big news here first. Ronda Rousey losing via knockout. Decisive win by Holly Holm. Holly Holm won the fight. Forget the knockout. She won the first round. She was winning the second round. Ronda Rousey was exhausted going into round two as she tried desperately to chase this girl around the ring to try to take her down. She was able to clinch. She was unable to execute all of her judo throws. She got taken down at one point. At one point, she did have the opportunity to go for an armbar. She couldn't get it. Holly Holm got out of it. Holly Holm was the better fighter. Ronda Rousey beaten. And I don't know where she goes from here, besides the obvious maybe a rematch.
Well, she went to the hospital. That's how nasty the knockout was that Holly Holm delivered. Well, there's a lot of places she could go from here. There's just going to be how does somebody react? Anytime somebody loses for the first time, especially somebody who's so high profile, how do they respond to a loss? How do they respond to a big, brutal loss? Both, you know, from a fighting point of view, from a lot. And she had a lot going on in the last couple of weeks and months, seemingly leading into this fight. A lot of attention that she didn't want to have, with people talking about her relationships with Travis Brown, people talking about the relationships that her mother had with her trainer, her relationship with her trainer, the trainer's relationship with the IRS. It's been something. And when those weigh-ins happened on Friday, I thought Ronda looked a little bit drawn. She was, you know, just she seemed to be kind of unraveled. And, you know, there was a little bit of it where it's like, well, this is what Ronda does. She likes to get in people's faces. She likes to intimidate them. But there was just something did feel different about it this time around. And still, you know, Holly Holm is as much of a shot that as people would have thought she had came based around the boxing, and it came based around Ronda. You know, nobody's been able to do anything to Ronda. How is this going to happen? How is this going to shake out? And it shook out in the most perfect way for Holly Holm, which had Ronda just whiffing on shots, had her chasing her around. We talked about it on Friday. Everybody talks about you got to use the whole ring when it comes to Ronda Rousey. You got to make her come to you and use your footwork and dodge around. And all of that stuff is easily said. You know, Jessica Eye's been saying it for a long time. The people with Holly Holm have been saying it for a long time. But to actually see it in action was certainly something. And does this mean that Holly Holm has taken the next step in the MMA arena? Who knows? Does it just mean that she stylistically is a nightmare for Ronda Rousey? And this happens a lot. You know, there are people who they can beat everybody except that one person. Is that Holly Holm? Who knows? And who knows if we'll ever even get the rematch, because Ronda Rousey's got a lot of options outside of this, but a lot of questions for anybody out there that thought that Ronda Rousey fights have become so boring and repetitive, and it's actually hurting. Well, you should be happy, because there are a lot of new storylines going on, and who knows? I think there's going to be a lot of interest in Holly Holm right now.
I don't want to hear any of this stuff that people say about, oh, these fights, these Ronda Rousey fights are so quick, nobody's going to buy her shows anymore. Well, that would be great if not for the fact that the exact opposite has been happening. Every time she fights, more and more people are watching. Everybody, at least until last night, knew what was going to happen. First round, slaughtering of her opponent. And last night was the night that it all flipped upside down. And there's a guy, there was at least one guy on Twitter who was so mad at me this morning when I woke up. He was so mad. Oh, Brian's already making excuses for Ronda Rousey. Brian's already saying that Ronda wasn't Ronda. Listen, I made it very clear last night, as I did at the beginning of this show, that Holly Holm was the better fighter, that she knocked her out, that she won the first round, that she was winning the second round, that she was fighting the right fight to beat Ronda Rousey. Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there. For some reason, when I went to watch the press conference last night on YouTube, the chat window came up, and there were 33,000 people watching, and so the chat window's just going bonkers, haywire with everybody. People saying the nastiest things about Ronda Rousey, because there is a large group of people who hate Ronda Rousey. They hate her. And because they hate her, they are unable to look at the big picture, which is that, in fact, that was not your normal Ronda Rousey last night. I am not taking anything away from Holly Holm. If you look at this fairly, which I'm trying to do here, because I don't care either way whether Ronda Rousey wins or loses. I had no money on this. All I'm doing is reporting on the situation. That was not the normal Ronda Rousey. It was not the normal Ronda Rousey at the weigh-in. It was not the normal Ronda Rousey body at the weigh-in, behavior at the weigh-in. It was not the normal Ronda Rousey behavior in a fight last night. Granted, she couldn't do anything. There was nothing she could do in the fight because, as I said, Holly Holm was the better fighter. But, as I said, there were times when Ronda Rousey had the ability to do her armbar. She had her on the ground. She was setting up her armbar. You know how many people have escaped Ronda Rousey's armbar? Not just escaped it once it was fully applied. Holly Holm prevented her from even applying the armbar. Holly Holm prevented her from doing her hip throws. Holly Holm prevented her from doing everything. This was not your normal Ronda Rousey. Now, am I saying that here with the belief that if they fought again, Ronda's going to beat her next time? No, I'm not saying that at all. I would bet that with the same game plan from both camps, Holly Holm would beat her again. I don't know how this is going to change for Ronda Rousey when she trains for the next fight, but this was not your usual Ronda Rousey, probably for all of the reasons Mike already mentioned. Her mom trashing her trainer filing for bankruptcy, her trainer claiming he's made no money in God knows how long while he's training Ronda Rousey. Everybody coming out and talking about Travis Brown, her boyfriend, who she didn't want to talk about. She hung up on one of her media appearances because people were asking her about Travis Brown. There's a lot of things going on in her life, and to discount that because you hate Ronda Rousey, well, that's not looking at this thing fairly.
And can't forget, too, that it takes two people to get in there, and Holly Holm was getting paid, too, and there was, you know, for everybody putting her down and making, you know, talking about her. She's been fighting now for a long time. She's been boxing for, 15, 20 years. You know, a decade ago, I was buying Holly Holm pay-per-views. This is true. They had boxing pay-per-views that her people set up, where she faced Chevelle Hollenbach and Christy Martin and Mia St. John and a lot of names because she was the best women's boxer in the world, and they wanted everybody to know it. And as soon as she started training MMA, it was pretty clear that Ronda Rousey at that time was going to be the fight, and nothing has changed in all of that time. And she's basically been training for Ronda Rousey, and she did everything right. Her corner did everything right. And it's interesting to see from here if they can continue to do everything right, because we have seen her in other UFC fights have holes that have been opened up, and there's ways to beat Holly Holm that a lot of people believe. So again, it's just, this is a really intriguing story for that division because it opens it up now, seemingly. It'd be very interesting for Holly Holm, who, unlike Ronda, is, you know, the Ronda, again, we can talk about it after the break a little bit. Some of the things at the press conference, Holly Holm is what she is, and she may not be the most exciting interview in the world, but she is a humble and good person, and let's see how UFC markets that.
We'll start taking phone calls after the break. If you're listening in a vehicle, I'll give you the phone numbers after we come back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Taking your phone calls, talking all the news today. The phone numbers, studio line, 425-488-0525. Toll free, 844-411-5411. Once again, toll free 844-411-5411. And you can text message us at 425-780-7566. All of these numbers available on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And to the studio line, you're on the air today. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Ian from San Antonio.
Yes, Ian.
Well, first of all, I want to send my condolences to Nick Bockwinkel's family for his passing. I wasn't aware that he passed. Until, you know, I heard on the show. But, so I want to do that. And also I want to talk about Ronda Rousey. You know, the whole fight she lost last night and everything, that's crazy that she lost. Even though, you know, like you said, I don't think she was completely herself. But I want to ask, when it comes to her in the WWE, do you think that because she lost last night, now they're not going to want her at all, but do you think that it could affect the impact of her coming as opposed to maybe her coming in undefeated and just, you know, forfeiting the title because she just wanted to go wrestle? Because, I don't know, like, you know, like with Brock Lesnar, when he came back, even though he lost in the UFC, he'd already had a history. And even though Ronda Rousey, like, was a big star, I don't think she got to the level that Brock Lesnar was all the time that he spent in the UFC because he was just there longer.
I'm still a little bit confused about your question. Does her losing...
Do you think that, like, what, Ronda Rousey's going to have less of an impact now if she decides to come wrestle, or when she does, because she lost?
Well, first off, a couple of things. First off, there's no guarantee that she'll ever even have a match in WWE. I mean, if she retires, then we can talk. But as long as she's
right.
under contract with UFC, which she's going to be until she retires, then I don't know if Dana is ever going to give her the okay to do a match. Dana has said he's not going to give her the okay to do a match. And
well, I'm saying if she goes.
Well, if she goes, I mean, everybody, I don't think it's going to make one. She's still a gigantic star. I don't think it will make really one difference one way or the other that she lost this fight.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, and that's the one great thing about pro wrestling anyway, is you could always, you know, change the narrative and make people forget. And as long as you get them inside of a storyline, you know, or two in a row, really, that's really all you would need before the thought of her losing, you know, is out of everybody's minds. As long as she's a decent worker and decent on the microphone and is a good TV presence, that's really all you kind of need. No, there's nobody out there with the internet now. I'm sure everybody's seen Alberto Del Rio get his head kicked off by Mirko Krokop years ago in Pride. Doesn't really mean anything.
I mean, realistically, if this were a company, WWE, where wins and losses really mattered, then maybe we could talk. But every single person on that show loses all the time, including the champion, at one point having a 1-17 record. So I'm pretty sure that Ronda Rousey will be okay coming in if she's had one loss in mixed martial arts. To the toll-free line, you are on the air. What's up?
How you doing, Brian? This is John from Memphis, Tennessee. How you doing today?
I heard you won $2,000 last night putting money on Holly Holm.
I had a wonderful day, man. This is the best day. First of all, let me do this. First of all, before I start, I want to give my condolences to Mick Bockwinkel. I've been watching him as a 4 or 5 years old. He used to come to the Coliseum and wrestle Jerry Lawler for the AWA. Jerry Lawler's chance to get the AWA title. I want to give my condolences to this. Second, I really want to say this. It's been 10 years since Eddie Guerrero's death, man, and it still passes me by. But let me get to what I called for. That fight was a strange fight. That was not the, like you said, Brian, that was not the typical Ronda Rousey fight. And I kind of figured, I'm glad that I went in the $100 before the weigh-in and put and won that and got the 20-1 odds, because after the weigh-in, the odds went down to over halfway down to almost 10-1 to 9-1, Brian.
That's right.
Now, I know you, and for people don't understand it who's not gamblers, that is kind of strange for situations like that. Because there were some bookies out there and sports odds makers saying that it should have been maybe 6-1, 7-1, at the highest 8-1. When they came out with the original odds makers 20-1, I knew something was strange about that. That was just too easy. That's the reason why I put the 100 down, and just for a simple factor like that, you should have done that. And I went online, I went to the Temple Men website, looked for inspiration from the greatest and most intelligent man in the Figure Four Empire, Vincent Verhey, and I thank him for giving me the inspiration. You tell him that tonight, Brian.
Oh, I will.
Thank you.
A guy who didn't put any money on Holly Holm, but yes.
Damn, yeah, I'm the one who said, hey, if you got an extra 100, put it
Semper
on Holly
Vivi
Holm.
Semper Vivi for one day should be ranked above Vinny.
No.
Man, I'm just asking for some snack money, too, out of that. I don't even want, like, the whole lobster or anything. You just, like, give me some McDonald's money out of what you got now.
Oh, Semper Vivi. Why don't I pay you those big bucks, man?
Shoot.
But I really want to ask you this. So what is next for I know you've been debating what is next. What about this? If she's, quote-unquote, retired and does the Hollywood thing, like some other actors, do you think she will, if she takes 5 or 6 years off a comeback, you think she would be more relevant 5 or 6 years later if she wants to make a comeback, or you think she's just going to be, this is it for her?
John, listen to me, buddy. Listen to me. First off, I want to thank you very much for the call and congratulate you on your money that you won last night, your $2,000. But if Ronda Rousey retires, she ain't coming back in 5 years. I would almost guarantee it. I can't guarantee it because there is a possibility that she could somehow blow through all of her money, and then obviously a return fight 5 years down the road or a return contract would bring some money in. I don't think she's that bad with her money. I think as soon as she started making money, the first thing she did was buy a house. And I mean, she's not an idiot, and I'm sure she's going to make a fair amount of money in Hollywood. I'm sure she's socked away a lot of money. So if she retires, I think she's done. I think she's finished. I don't think she's going to retire after this loss. I think she's going to train like crazy and want to try to avenge it. I don't know if they're going to do immediate rematch and hold Holly Holm off until UFC 200, but I do think that you're going to see at least a rematch. If she loses a rematch, maybe that's it and she's out of here. If she wins, maybe they do Cyborg and then she's out of here. But she's been talking retirement for a long time, and I think it's on her mind.
Yeah, and I mean, how long has she been doing something related to combat now? For how many years in a row has she been doing this? So You know, maybe it is time to you know, like you said, she's been talking about retirement. Maybe she just needs a little bit of time away. Maybe she needs a lot of time away. Who knows? Again, a lot of credit goes to Holly Holm. And I know a lot of people are with those odds are comparing this to Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson. In fact, when I saw the interview on ESPN after the fight, it came up and Holm didn't shake it off. She kind of, you know, went with it. But I look at this a lot more like the Haseem Rahman fight against Lennox Lewis, their first fight, which took place in South Africa. And during the training of that movie, and it's not exactly the same. There aren't perfect parallels towards this fight and towards Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey, but it does speak to that big shift in line. And there's always a little bit of a shift in the line. You know, there's always late money that usually comes in on the underdog when there are, you know, odds, you know, large odds, especially. But in that fight in 2001, Lennox Lewis was out filming Ocean's 11, which featured a scene with him and I believe it was Vladimir Klitschko was the Yeah, it was Vladimir Klitschko at the time, who was on a roll, and you know, the possibility of them fighting on HBO pay-per-view, and you know, there was a lot of hype behind that. But as that was going on, Haseem Rahman was busting his ass. He had never really had the shot before. Buster Douglas had. Buster Douglas had lost to Tony Tucker. He had shots at the heavyweight title, and he always came up short. There was always a reason he came up short. With Rahman, he had some losses, so it's not like home, but he was dead serious, and he was completely tuned in, and he was well-trained, and he was kind of getting to the peak of where he was going to be at, and at the press conference or the weigh-ins that took place the day before, Lennox Lewis got up there and he looked terrible. And a lot of the same things that were said about Ronda Rousey, about where his head was at, how his training was going, exactly what condition he was actually in. A lot of people took their money, me included, and put a bunch of it on Haseem Rahman. And it was an incredibly good decision because Haseem Rahman ended up knocking out Lennox Lewis, whose head just wasn't there and whose body just wasn't there. Now, when they came back, Lennox Lewis proved his dominance over Haseem Rahman again, and maybe that's what happens with Ronda Rousey and with Holly Holm, but I think that's a little bit more of a fair comparison than Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson, because this wasn't some journeyman who landed, you know, one big miracle punch. This was Holly Holm, and yes, Buster Douglas broke down Mike Tyson as well, and he survived some things, just like Holly Holm did, but I think Holm's performance, again, I think it slights it a little bit to compare it to Buster Douglas, like she's going to be a flash in a pan. Let's see where she goes with this first, because the reality is, at the end of the day, and I know a lot of MMA fans had not seen this because they did not know her boxing background, but the fact of the matter is, when it's come to her in combat sports, Holly Holm's always been a winner, and that's something you can't take away from Holm.
After the break, we're going to continue taking phone calls. I have a whole bunch of text messages here, and virtually all of them are about Ronda Rousey. So, if you would like to join us, phone numbers after the break. You can also head to the front page of WrestlingObserver.com and grab them there. Back in just a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Got some Ronda Rousey notes from WrestlingObserver.com's daily news update, which you can always check out daily at WrestlingObserver.com. Last night, Ronda Rousey, more than 10 million searches on Google, which was number two to only everything that's going down in Paris, France. Number two in the entire world, Ronda Rousey. And she was, of course, taken to the hospital last night. Her lip was split in half. We'll need plastic surgery to repair it. But they do not believe that even though she was knocked out, they don't believe she suffered a concussion. And so she will probably not get any sort of medical suspension. And, well, I'm sure she'll get a medical suspension, but no concussion. And I guess we will find out what's next for her very soon. Holly Holm, open to a rematch. Dana White, obviously, was in quite a mood last night after Ronda Rousey was beaten. I know that, I believe he claimed that this is why they set up fights like this, but they had a fight they wanted to make quite clearly, which was Ronda Rousey versus Chris Cyborg. Cyborg is getting closer and closer to 135. And now it's looking like, at best, they can do a rematch, which, to be fair, is going to be gigantic. The Ronda Rousey-Holly Holm rematch will be significantly bigger than last night's show. May even set the UFC record. Who knows? Depends on what the buy rate was for last night's show. But I don't know what that means for Cyborg. And Mike, did you see what Cyborg said last night?
The only thing I saw was the smiley face tweet that she sent out, but I didn't actually hear what she said.
She wants to fight Ronda now, and she said, let's do it at 140.
like she all of a sudden has got some sort of sway in all of this?
I guess now she thinks that she's in control here.
Oh.
You know what she should have posted last night? Not a smiley face, a frowny face.
That I was going to say, somebody with their pockets turned inside out looking all sad and whatnot, because that's what you missed out on. Holly Holm does not need to fight Cyborg, period. Cyborg needs Ronda Rousey. Holm does not need Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey does not need a Cyborg. There are fights to make where the most obvious one is the rematch with Ronda Rousey, but it's like Holly Holm and Misha Tate could be something that you could market and put out there and have, you know, the preacher's daughter against the beautiful, you know, but couldn't conquer Ronda like, you know, Holly Holm could. And there you have stories you can make with Holly Holm and the entire rest of that division where you don't need Cyborg to come in here. I mean, one of the reasons that people have talked about Cyborg really at all, and she's been able to keep herself up in this deal, has been because Ronda Rousey has laid waste to the entire division, and you needed some opponents. Is there super fights? Does she fight Floyd Mayweather? Could Ronda beat dudes? All that nonsense was because she was so dominant in her division. That's the only reason that Cyborg continued to look attractive in this whole deal, other than people that are really big Cyborg fans who have been wanting to see this fight for a long time. All that's out the window now. Sorry, Cyborg, you can put out that smiley face tweet all that you want, but the reality of the situation is you got no cards here, period. You got a name, but you know what? As time goes on, that name means less and less and less.
On a related UFC note, then we'll go to the phones. If you are a subscriber, the Filthy Tom Lawler Filthy World Title Series for a chance to win WWE 2K16 is kicking off very soon. And if you are one of the, I believe, 32 people who entered the contest, the brackets are now available. And if you go to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, I have retweeted Filthy Tom's post, the entire brackets for the upcoming Filthy World Title Series, and I will be reading out the rules very, very soon. It's going to be a promo contest on Twitter as voted on by myself, Filthy Tom, and the fans. And of course, Filthy Tom's show airs every Monday exclusively for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. To the studio line, you are on the air. What's up?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Yes, Ryan.
I get my thoughts on Ronda Rousey. I believe that
Ryan, before you go on, I just want you to know, I can't wait. Go ahead.
Okay, if you notice the clock, if that would have went five rounds, that match would have been like the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan Halloween Havoc. And, you know,
I know where you're going. I know where you're going, Ryan, but incorrect, because UFC has an extended window, and at least once this year, they did in fact go past the top of the hour, so they would not have lost the pay-per-view feed had it gone five rounds.
Okay, my second reason is, say like Royce Gracie fought Mike Tyson. Royce wouldn't be running around the ring trying to box Mike Tyson like Ronda Rousey was against Holly Holm.
That is correct. That is correct, Ryan. You have made an accurate statement, because Royce Gracie would have been a defensive fighter. He would have waited for Tyson to come towards him, and then he would have attempted to close the distance, clinch, and take the man down. Ronda decided she was going to chase Holly Holm, which was a bad idea.
And finally, you'll notice that MSN was promoting Ronda as like a bad girl, like beating up her boyfriends, and also she was playing the heel. So it's like,
did you say MSN?
The preacher's daughter.
Yes. MSN?
Yeah, didn't you see that great big article MSN did, like comparing Ronda Rousey to Ray Rice and all these NFL football players, how she beats up all her boyfriends?
Is MSN the Microsoft network?
Yeah.
I didn't know that still existed. But no, yeah. Ryan, I didn't see that.
So you could tell, you know, they were turning Ronda heel.
Did you find this on the Lycos search engine, or how did you find this MSN?
And here's the thing about being Ronda being turned heel. I don't think anybody's had to do that. There are lots of people that don't like Ronda Rousey or don't like her attitude or don't like something about her.
Hatred for Ronda Rousey that I saw this weekend is mind-boggling to me. I mean, it's not, actually.
Some of that's done to herself.
On the handshake, she wouldn't shake hands. She was sitting after the bell. This is a completely different Ronda Rousey.
Ryan, did you go to our website yesterday? Did you go to our website at all?
I might have looked at it briefly.
Okay, well, if you would have looked carefully, you would have seen a screenshot from the weigh-ins when Holly Holm appeared to have punched Ronda Rousey. Now, granted, Ronda Rousey did get in her face, but you're not allowed to punch someone at the weigh-ins.
Trick photography there.
I could not believe when people... Actually, I got to give credit to Joe Rogan. Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm go to the middle of the octagon, and they're given the opportunity to touch gloves, and Holly Holm lifts her gloves up, and Ronda just death stares her and turns around and starts walking away. And Mike Goldberg is baffled. I was like, what? And Joe Rogan says, well, duh. Because, yeah, well, duh. She got punched at the weigh-ins. Of course she's not touching gloves.
She didn't get punched at the weigh-in, though. That was the whole thing, was she stormed over there and got in. And this is why a lot of people don't like Ronda, because, again, and everybody's different. There's, you know, you hear a lot of mainstream, you know, and people who are not really hardcore fight fans that crawl out of the woodwork. And, you know, they jump on Ronda. But the fact of the matter is, Ronda was the one who got in Holly Holm's face. You know, she wanted to put her arm in there. And it did, you know, from one of those pictures, it did make it look as though Holly Holm was punching her in the face. And it's funnier now in hindsight because of what's happened. But, you know, the attitude that Rousey has, you know, and this is she's a fighter. This is the fighters are not.
She's making money, everybody. Calm down.
And fighters are not choir people, you know, much of the time. You have to take some of their attitudes and things like that. You have to take the good with the bad, no matter how they're promoted by the company that they work for. But she was kind of, you know, in a lot of people's eyes, you know, extra prickish to somebody who really doesn't deserve it, and called her out as being fake, which is absolutely not the case. Holly Holm actually is what she is. So there were a lot of people that were sour at that, but it's not like Ronda Rousey's never been booed before. You know, it's not been that long of a period of time where she was getting booed against Misha Tate, and she was on The Ultimate Fighter, and people, you know, there were people that didn't like her. I mean, you have to take both together. And just, you know, as far as Hoist Gracie goes, if he was fighting Mike Tyson, even if Hoist Gracie was doing something as stupid as trying to play fisticuffs with a Mike Tyson, he would have had another Gracie in his corner slap him upside his head and go, you better change what you're doing, which is also something Ronda didn't have last night with poor Edmund, who, Edmund.
Listen, if you don't like Ronda Rousey, that's cool. Ronda Rousey has a very, very abrasive personality.
She can be polarizing.
But, what everybody needs to understand is that Ronda Rousey's nickname is Rowdy Ronda Rousey, which the Rowdy comes from pro wrestler Rowdy Roddy Piper. She frequently has Judo Jean LaBelle in her corner. Professional wrestler Judo Jean LaBelle. Now, I realize that the Gracies are vehemently anti-pro wrestling, but if you think that Henner Gracie doesn't understand running a business and attempting to make money and promotion, think again. Ronda Rousey she has gone from living in her car to being a multi-millionaire. And granted, some of that is because she's a great fighter and she destroyed everybody and she became a phenomenon because she was first. But
it helps.
But she understands how to promote fights. And some of the things that you see that drive you crazy about Ronda Rousey is Ronda Rousey understanding how to promote a fight. How to draw people to a living room to buy a pay-per-view hoping that someone is going to knock her out. She understands that. And she's been doing that for a long, long time now. And I'm not saying that that's what happened to the weigh-ins, because honest to God, I think she just lost her mind and there was too much pressure on her and she flipped her lid. But there's a lot of things that Ronda Rousey has done. There's a lot of things that Ronda Rousey has said that is purposely by design to draw attention, interest, and money. And she's been very successful at it.
It's I can't remember. I think my grandmother said
it's a work is what I'm trying to say. Not all of it, some of it.
When you're the chief cook and bottle washer, you know, sometimes the pressure gets you and you got to do everything. And I think Rhonda became unraveled with everything that's been going on. But, you know, one of the things, one of the ways she becomes unraveled is the pressure of selling a fight. That here's one thing with Holly Holm. You know, she did, from a very sporting point of view, she did a good job as far as selling millions and millions and millions of pay-per-views. She didn't do exactly what you'd want as far as, you know, leading up and promoting a fight. And
no.
Rhonda was the one who had to be out there on doing all the shows. And granted, she's got to do them anyway, but the Jimmy Kimmels and doing all that sort of stuff and making appearances and dealing with the press and all of that stuff going on with some of the negative stuff, even if everything was positive, it's still a lot of pressure. And, you know, that's it's no excuse, but you do. Let's see how Holly Holm now goes with this. I mean, it's to the victor goes the spoils, but also it's a heavy crown.
Well, Holly Holm is going to make $1 million minimum because she beat Ronda Rousey and she's going to get a fight as the champion. However, Holly Holm's promotion of the fight, which was non-existent, you can say what you want about Holly Holm. I know a lot of people love Holly Holm. I thought she was great. I thought she was great at the post-fight press conference. So likable. However, if she would have gone in last night and lost to Ronda Rousey, she probably never would have made $1 million fighting in her whole life. Because if you don't go out there and get people interested in you as a fighter, not you if you're fighting someone that they know, but you as a fighter yourself, you're not going to make big money in fighting. That's just the way that it is. Ronda understands that. Chael Sonnen understands that. Daniel Cormier understands that. I'm sure John Jones understands that. George St. Pierre understands that. The big moneymakers all understand that. And there are a lot of fans that don't understand that.
Which is amazing because wrestling, boxing, pro wrestling, no matter what it is, a combat sport, no matter what it is, it's two people fighting. The whole thing is, why do people want to see these two fight? It's a very simple thing. It's a very simple thing for the entire history of time.
To the break. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Well, I got a few moments in this segment, so to the toll-free line. You are on the air. What's going on?
Hi, this is Paul in Barbersville, and I'd like to take a little break from the UFC discussion to talk about the Tenryu retirement show that New Japan Pro Wrestling ran last night. I'm watching a replay. I had to take a little bit of a hiatus because it is a 4.5-hour show, and it's mostly been very good, but I think I have seen a -5-star match.
Oh, really?
Yes, there is a 6-man tag featuring a team captained by the great Kabuki, who is 67 years old.
I heard about this.
Oh, this is a 10-star match.
Oh, yes, and a match and a team.
That's a difference of 15 stars we're talking about here.
I'll explain later.
Go ahead.
I don't know. Do they appreciate an age? And the great Kajika, who is 73 years old and wore like a basketball jersey to point this out with like the big giant number 73. And I was terrified watching this, thinking someone might die. What were they thinking?
I heard about that a few times during the show last night.
They were taking bumps. Well, Kojika was taking bumps. And it was actually, it was amazing, and I got to be honest. It was definitely this was not Viano's territory. I mean, I think if you needed to be insulted by anybody, it would be Kai, who looked like he was going to be something in All Japan years ago, and was just dealing with the indie sleaze with the other members in the match, like the Jin Kasais and such. But Kojika and Kabuki, I thought were they did a lot more than I thought they would, and it was a little bit scary at times. But give them the credit.
Back in a moment with Hour 2, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live, here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Full schedule up at sportsbyline.com. We've been here an hour today already, and so much news to talk about. Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm, the death of Nick Bockwinkel, WWE tomorrow. Got a lot of text messages here that we can read following the break. Phone calls as well. If you are listening and would like to join the program, our studio line, 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. Toll free, 844-411-5411. That is toll free, 844-411-5411. You can also send us a text message at 425-780-7566. No phone calls, please, to that number. Only text messages, 425-780-7566. We'll jump into the phone calls after the break. A couple of text messages here. This person says, Vince seems set to make Reigns the next John Cena. He isn't dumb enough to book Reigns-Lesnar for WrestleMania with Brock the huge face, is he? Anything is possible. They tried this last year. It wasn't working out. They changed their mind. Don't think that Vince could not book a Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns WrestleMania main event for a second time this year. Brock Lesnar is currently unaccounted for at WrestleMania. We don't know who he's going to be facing. There have been a lot of changes to the Mania card. We know that Randy Orton is off the card. We know that Seth Rollins is off the card. A lot of questions going into Mania. Dave Meltzer's got a full look at what we know about the card in the current edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which is available on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com for subscribers. Head up there and check that out. We'll talk more about this after the break. Take your calls, read more text messages, and more Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. All right, we are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. It's Carl Stern's theme for his show right there. For those of you that love Carl Stern's show at WrestlingObserver.com, a lot of stuff to get into today, but to the studio line, you are on the air. What's up?
This is Jim from Virginia.
Yes, Jim.
I'd just like to send out my condolences to Nick Bockwinkel's family. He was a class act in and out of the ring. A lot of people, I was just going over some things about his career. Didn't he do some announcing in like the 80s, late 80s, 90s for WCW or NWA?
Mike, do you recall?
Who was it?
Nick Bockwinkel doing announcing for WCW and NWA.
I don't remember him announcing. He may have done some spot gigs, but I remember him more as the commissioner. He had a figurehead commissioner role as Hulk Hogan was coming into the company. It was established before he got there.
Oh, let me jump in, Mike, and talk about this. This was one of those things that they did. We've been watching all of the Nitro shows, starting from episode number one. And this was one of those things that was like, it was a new era when Hogan came in and Bischoff and the Monday Night Wars, but there were still a couple of holdovers from the prior era that for a while we had to hear about randomly, but it never made any sense and it never played in anything. Every now and then they just mention, well, Nick Bockwinkel, blah, 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 blah. Or my other favorite, oh, he's been thrown over the top rope. Isn't that a DQ? And, of course, you know, that's from 1992 and Bill Watts, and it wasn't a DQ in 1996. And if it was, they pretty much eventually just dropped it. But I do recall that, yes.
You was talking about the Ronda Rousey fight. I watched it last night. That was just brutal. I mean, I watched it. I could not believe, guys, what I was watching. That was not, I'm like you, that was not a Ronda Rousey run-of-the-mill fight. That was just something bizarre.
That's what I thought.
I mean, I actually, it could be good for the women's MMA, though. You've got an instant feud right there, though.
Well, you have an automatic rematch, which... Here's my thoughts on this, as far as, like, what this loss meant for business. If Chris Cyborg was almost down to 135, and Chris Cyborg could have made the weight, and they could have done Ronda and Cyborg at UFC 200, then I think that this finish actually was bad for business. Because I think an undefeated Ronda Rousey versus Cyborg at UFC 200 is monstrous. Now, if Cyborg is nowhere close to making 135, if she's never going to make 135, then I think that Ronda losing is the best thing for business. Because Ronda was running very, very low on challengers, as the odds makers believed in the case of Holly Holm. And by losing, this now sets up a very, very, very lucrative rematch. And maybe, who knows, maybe the rematch of this fight because Holly beat Ronda will actually be bigger than Ronda versus Cyborg would have been. I don't know. We'll probably never know. I mean, we will never know, but I think it all depends on Cyborg, really.
Exactly. Y'all have a good evening there.
Thank you, my friend. He's always got a short, sweet phone call.
Well, he learns from some of the other, you know, ones that like Ryan and Ed. I'm waiting on Ed to call in.
None of these are short and sweet. They're short and sweet by my design. It's called hanging up on them. Let's go to the toll-free line. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Eric in Chicago.
Yes, Eric.
Have either of you two gentlemen watched the Table for Three this past week?
No. Which one was this? Was this with Wade Barrett where he's talking about how he's lost every single match since he won King of the Ring?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but no, I think I want to.
Is it good?
Okay. I have to talk about a moment during this with what happened. You need to see it first for that when they all acknowledge that King of the Ring is a geek tournament. But secondly, and most importantly, you need to see it for the look on Wade Barrett's face when William Regal declares that the best moment of his career, his entire career here, was when he dressed in drag on Raw Roulette in Vegas. It was the look of terror, disgust, fury, contempt, confusion. This man displayed so many emotions with just this one look, and you can tell that his brain just could not register this information he was being given. As a fellow Englishman, he could not accept this as fact. It was amazing. William Regal, everybody. And his reasoning, it was fun.
You know, if that's his reasoning, then good for him. If his reasoning is it was fun, then good for him. Listen, there have been people who have said...
Did anyone call Regal a fancy pants tart like he would call someone?
Oh. There have been people who have said, you know, Terry Taylor when he was the Red Rooster. And, I mean, this was just the worst gimmick imaginable. But there have been people who have defended the Red Rooster because they have said, you know what? Everybody will always remember the Red Rooster. Now, if William Regal would have come out and said, the reason this is my favorite moment in my career is because nobody will ever forget when I came out dressed in drag at Raw Roulette. Let me tell you something. Everybody's going to forget that. But they're not going to forget that you were an awesome wrestler. And when I think of William Regal, trust me, the first thing I think is not the day that he came out in drag at Raw Roulette in Vegas. In fact, the only reason I remember that happened is because they show that replay all the time on Raw. Without that, I would have blocked it out of my mind the next day. But I will always remember William Regal had awesome matches when he whipped Goldberg. Remember that? I'm going to remember that a lot more than when he dressed in drag. I'll tell you that much.
One thing I'll say, though, about it is it lends to his the ability to do a little bit of everything and make the best out of a bad situation. And they have had William Regal do some wacky things, and he seems to be all for many of those wacky things. And even though they aren't exactly world of sport level of round matches and 20-minute epics and Queensberry rules against Ric Flair, they are quite memorable, and they do add to how great of a character and how great of a personality William Regal really is.
He is great. To the studio line, you're on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
It's Ed.
Ed, where are you calling from? I specifically asked.
San Antonio.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm a little offended by Shemp because I specifically was trying to call in today specifically to ask Shemp questions, and he's insulting me like a minute ago.
Specifically.
Highly offended, but I would still like to ask Shemp my questions if I could.
Well, Shemp, what do you think?
All right, speak.
Okay, well, I'm very saddened about Nick Bockwinkle passing away. And when I was a kid and used to go to Southwest shows, they used to bring Nick Bockwinkle in as the AWA champion. And I was wondering if you knew how Southwest became an AWA territory, because if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Texas before the split pretty much all NWA territory?
It was, but like Houston, Paul Bosch always had a great relationship with the AWA and always had problems with the NWA champion, problems with dates, problems with, you know, this and that. So that's why he used the AWA and Nick Bockwinkel in the AWA championship. And like Bockwinkel defending against Wahoo McDaniel is probably more notable than many NWA title defenses in that town. And I think it was sort of the same way when Southwest split away. And Joe Blanchard split away from the Von Erichs in that booking office. He needed to bring in a champion. And although he maintained good relationships with lots of people, the shot at getting the NWA champion, I think, pretty much went out the window. And that's why he would bring in the AWA champion. And again, you know, you had the matches with Wahoo McDaniel. You had the Funks relationship. So there was a tie-in to the AWA that way. And as time went on and the NWA started to split and Southwest got on USA and tried to go national, you know, they didn't get much help from anybody. They certainly weren't getting it from the WWF at the time, with maybe Andre coming in once in a while. They weren't getting it from the NWA, and they decided to go the route of pushing more along the lines of the AWA, to the point where that was paid back way, way, way later on during the dying days of the AWA when Joe Blanchard was made commissioner.
No, when
actually, Ed, we have to head to a break. That's the music. But if you want to stand by, I'll let you ask Shemp one more after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Friday, the 10-year anniversary of the death of an all-time great Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer, Eddie Guerrero, passing away on November 13 of 2005. And, of course, he was awesome. I don't know what more to say. He was great.
So, yeah, it's just incredibly, incredibly great, and was for a long, long time before he got recognized. And, you know, we're going to talk about it during the break of how broken up so many people were. I mean, he was such a... Everybody knew his demons. Everybody knows what he was up against. But everybody loved Eddie. For as volatile as he could be and as, you know, as short-tempered as he could be, everyone knew how hard he was on himself and how hard he drove himself and how hard he beat on his own body in so many different ways. And just a huge loss and so many great memories that came from Eddie Guerrero matches for me. Mostly in WCW and most certainly in WWE later on. I know for a lot of other people, it was his work in ECW or in Mexico or California or whatever. But just a legendary figure and very sad. And hopefully his wife, obviously, his ex-wife Vicky, was taken care of, maybe not on screen sometimes in the best way by WWE, but they made sure to take care of her, and they wouldn't have done that and reached that handout, I don't think, if the person that that she was married to wasn't really, really a special guy.
Forget the work. I remember the early 2000s when all of a sudden he came out of his shell and he became one of the most charismatic wrestlers in WWE history. If you watch those 96 Nitros that we've been watching when Eddie showed up, and it's amazing.
That was, my God, the mullet, the bad mustache.
That was 5 years before Latino Heat. This guy cutting the most generic, horrible babyface promos imaginable. And 5 years later, he's awesome. It's really incredible to watch. It's proof that anybody, if they put their mind to it, can become a charismatic superstar. You're not necessarily born with it, or maybe he was. He just didn't understand how to unleash it, but holy smokes did he unleash it later on. Anyway, Ed is still on the line here. Ed, you had one more question for Shemp?
Yeah. When you mentioned Paul Bosch and you mentioned Southwest going national, when they did that, they went into Houston and had a big show, and Bosch responded with a show that, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they send the NWA and WWE or WWF champion to that show, or am I remembering that wrong?
I'll look it up as we go along. I mean, that's completely possible that they would have called in all the big guns to take the shot back at Southwest going in there. You know, they were obviously – Southwest was on bad terms with the Von Erichs. You know, there was the whole battle of I want to use Tully and they wanted me to push the Von Erichs and I don't want to push the Von Erich boys and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, you took a direct shot at Paul Bosch and Bosch's relationship with – you know, with Bill Watts and with plenty of other people, I am sure that they had an opposition show and they pulled out all the stops and called in favors that they would do at the time, promoters would do at the time. If you went to battle with an established promoter in their town and they were a National Wrestling Alliance promoter, unless you had something to offer the NWA where they would back you, which did happen over the years in a very, you know, two-faced way, but the reality is if you weren't, they would call in people from all over the country, get Jack Briscoe out of Florida, get Bob Backlund out of the WWWF, get the Crusher out of, you know, the AW, whatever you had to do to load up that card to prove that you were the dominant force in that town, that's what they would do. So as we go on, I'll look it up and find out for sure, but would not stun me at all.
Text message line tonight, 425-780-7566. We're about to jump into the text messages. Studio line is open right now, 425-488-0525. Toll free, 844-411-5411. All numbers on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. This person says, what are the chances WWE adds Goldberg to WrestleMania for much needed star power, and does the Goldberg versus Ryback dream match happen? First off, you, Texter, are the only man, except maybe Ryan from Cumberland, who could possibly want a Goldberg versus Ryback match. That sounds like a nightmare to me. Now, I would normally say, I don't think there's any chance of this happening, but with so many guys down, Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, we have no idea if Sting is going to make it, The Rock is not going to be there. Ronda Rousey is not going to be there, at least in a wrestling capacity. I don't put it past them to ask anybody to come back, including Goldberg, including Batista. I don't know if anything is going to happen. I'm just speculating based on this will be the biggest WrestleMania of all time in terms of attendance, legit attendance. And so they're going to want it to be big, and they got some problems, and they're going to need some names. One of them may be Goldberg, but who knows? This person here says, Ronda Rousey reminded me of Rocky Balboa in Rocky III. She lost her motivation, was distracted by lots of outside ring things. Mr. T, which was Holly Holmes, taught Rock a lesson, but the real test of how great you are is how you handle adversity. Her team had better come up with a better strategy, as it was quite bad last night. That was from Gomez.
Unfortunately,
I presume he meant Rocky and not The Rock.
Unfortunately for Ronda Rousey's mother, though, Rocky's trainer, in this case Edmund, did not pass away. So that's there's one difference between what happened last night and Rocky III.
The Lucha Underground tapings began this weekend. They taped two nights on, I believe, Friday and Saturday. In fact, I know Friday and Saturday because that's when I got the report from. There may have just been Saturday. Regardless, leads us to the question here. This person wants to know, to your knowledge, is Unimas running Lucha Underground this year? Because there was only English announcing by Melissa Santos. Last year, She did English and Spanish. Spanish, obviously, was for the Spanish version of the show on Unimas. I don't know, but the fact that she didn't do the ring announcing and they didn't do double all of the angles in English and Spanish does lead one to believe that maybe they aren't going to be on Unimas this year, but I don't know. I will try to find out for you.
I have not seen her in person the same way that Filthy Tom Lawler and Dave Meltzer have, but Melissa Santos is beautiful. And
yes.
It is very worrisome, as Dave was talking about, them having what looked to be a deal that could have been close with Televisa that ended up falling through. And that's very disheartening because I don't have El Rey. I do have Unimas, and I am a big proponent of if they could get a spot better. I know Dave is down on Unimas, but I believe that they could draw the eyeballs because I believe in the demographic that Unimas draws, where if they were prime time during the week, you'd be talking about a different story. But if they don't even have that, they most certainly probably aren't going to be anywhere else. And that's really, really disappointing, because that's obviously a market you want to play to, with guys that, you know, you want to, if you want to get this thing really going for the future, at some point you're going to have to tour, and you're going to need TV to do that. And you're going to have to run Texas and Southern California and Arizona and New Mexico and Chicago, which is a, you know, a big market, a big Latino market. You're going to have to give people a reason to go to those shows, and if they don't know you exist and they can't see you on TV, then they're not going to go to your shows, and you're never going to get off the ground and be anything more than what you are, which, again, with how much I like that concept, is a very disappointing prospect to look at. But it's, hey, who knows? You never know what could happen.
Let's go to the studio line. You are on the air. What's up?
It's John from Arkansas. I just had to chime in on this whole Rhonda thing. Now, all these people complaining about her, get off the girl's back. You know, you're not, there are some people that they're just going to rub you the wrong way, and you just have to accept their athletic skill for what it is. You don't have to like them. You don't have to cheer for them. Just get over it and respect the fact that they're actually an athlete. That's my take on that, and I was very...
Well, I hope you changed many people's minds with that speech.
I'm sure I probably didn't, but I really don't care. Much like her, I could care less whether anybody likes me, because like the great football player Terrell Owens, I love me some me. Aside from that, I'd like to go back to what I was about to say. Nick Bockwinkel, it's very depressing. You know, always loved to watch those old classic Bockwinkel matches. I mean, you talk about a guy who carried himself with such class and dignity, and just the prototype of what you would want to say, this is my world heavyweight champion. Beat this.
He was great. I mean, I growing up in the 80s, I caught the end of his career, and there were times, you know, watching the AWA that, you know, he was a relic from a different era, and there were a lot of those guys like that in the AWA and in Pro Wrestling USA, but he also, because of the way he presented himself, even though I didn't understand at that time the gravity of his career and how important he was throughout the 70s in so many different parts of the country and was having so many great matches, it was how he carried himself and his interview style that really made it. Again, I was not thrilled when they just handed him the belt when Stan Hansen left, because Stan Hansen was a champion that I liked as a kid, and he was, you know, he was wild and uncontrollable, but you know, it was how Bockwinkel always handled himself, how he came across, the words he spoke, and his delivery that made him special, and that's going to last forever.
To the break, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We've got some text messages to read here today, one of which, no offense to the texter, is surprising to me, in the sense that I did not think that in 2015 I would be receiving an angry text message about the PWI 500.
Really?
Actually, the PWI Women's Top 50.
Okay.
Person says, why was Nikki Bella ranked number one? Clearly she isn't, they say. Well, don't get mad about the PWI Top 50 women. It's a fake list, and PWI is a publication that looks at wrestling as if it's real, right?
Well, kind of, sort of. They've changed a little.
They've changed a little bit, but
their job is also to sell magazines.
Sure, and I'm sure Nikki Bella on the cover sells a lot of magazines. And if this were real, Nikki Bella with her women's title record, that should put her as number one, right?
That would be the case. By the way, I'm a little disappointed in you. You guys have been going through all these nitros and everything, and occasionally I would hear you talk about how awesome Dean Malenko is at that time, and maybe it was 1997. Did you know, or
96.
Did you remember that the PWI 500, the number one wrestler in the world, where they couldn't decide on it, it ended up being Dean Malenko, and they actually brought it up on Nitro a couple times. Sometimes it's what seemingly was in jest, but Dean Malenko was actually the number one rated wrestler in the PWI 500.
Was it 97?
I think it was 97.
All right, I haven't got there yet. We're in the middle of 96, but firmly believe that he deserved that number one ranking. God, he was great.
He was an unbelievable.
Not sure I've ever mentioned that on the show before, but Dean Malenko was great.
I tell you, and hopefully you go through where you get to, at the very least, as you go through these reviews, the Jericho Malenko thing was so awesome, where Jericho dressed up as your boy Cicloplay, who may have already been, or Halloween, Malenko did at least, and it was, that whole storyline and that whole feud was, you know, for as much nonsense as took place and as cringe-inducing as some of the main event matches were with guys like Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper and some of the, you know, the many other names that were there, those undercards on those Nitro shows were unbelievable because of guys like Malenko and Jericho and Eddie Guerrero.
So tell me more about this show last night with the... I heard there were several matches where there was fear that men would be killed.
Yeah, it's true. The Revolution Final, the very last show for Genichiro Tenryu, a legendary Japanese wrestler in both New Japan and All Japan Pro Wrestling, where he got his start. And in fact, we'll tweet out this picture that Alan Farrell, who I did a three-hour epic show with today, which is up on the site for subscribers, let me know about, which features Tenryu, who was a sumo wrestler, where a lot of guys in Japan started their careers. And guys like Meng and Earthquake and names like that actually came out of the sumo ranks before they became professional wrestlers. But it's a picture of Giant Baba cutting off the sumo top knot on Tenryu's head, giving his entrance into pro wrestling. And all of these many years later, he finally had his retirement match. I don't got to even double check his age to see how old he is, but 60 years old at least.
I think
least.
He's 65.
I mean, just unbelievable. And he wrestled his last match last night against Kazuchika Okada, the current New Japan IWGP Heavyweight Champion. And you know, there were some bumps and clicks in that match, but some of the scarier matches were like the caller called about Kabuki and Kojika, and I never at any time thought that was a bad match. In fact, this whole show from top to bottom was a very fun show to watch, and if you have NewJapanWorld.com, it's up there for you as part of your regular subscription. There was a lot of indie sleaze on the show from promotions throughout Japan, and guys like Kiku Taro and The Winger and, like I said, Kai earlier on, and Kenichiro Arai, Nosawa, who's probably better known anymore as the guy, the Japanese dude who likes, you know, the Insane Clown Posse, but just a wild, eclectic group of individuals that basically seems like they were almost handpicked by Tenryu to appear on his last show. Just a unique bunch. But, you know, the scarier match, I think, was the very wacky and very weird match that took place with Kohei Suwama, who teamed up with Yuji Okabayashi to face off against Kazuyuki Fujita. Yes, that Kaz Fujita, who fought in Pride, and it was a longtime New Japan Pro Wrestling regular who now does stuff in IGF for Inoki. He teamed with Daisuke Sakamoto, and Sakamoto and Okabayashi are two great wrestlers that wrestle in a promotion called Big Japan over there, and they've never somehow gotten a break anywhere in a major promotion for a major amount of time, which is amazing. But they had to do their best to hold up a match that Suwama and Fujita, basically coming into this, they have teased fighting with each other for quite some time. They've teased wrestling matches. They've teased actual fights. Fujita actually has wanted to fight him. And how real the line is between how much these guys legitimately don't like each other and how much is just doing business is questionable. But from the time that they got into it last night in that match, the crowd turned on it. They beat the crap out of each other going around the ring. And Okabayashi and Sakamoto had to really pick up the slack. And it was like a tale of two matches taking place, with Suwama and Fujita brawling outside the ring and brawling in the crowd and really pulling the crowd down as Okabayashi and Sakamoto were having their match in the ring as fans chanted Big Japan at them, and they did a great job keeping the match going. So that was the only time, I think, where it was like, the only thing I could compare it to, they were brawling like it was the chicken and Peter Griffin on Family Guy all over the place, and it was quite messy. But there, the level of awesomeness on this show was really off the charts. Yoshihiro Takayama and Yoshiaki Fujiwara match against Minoru Suzuki and Kaz Murakami. Yes, Brian, you have to watch this match. It is tailor-made for you, and I don't want to spoil it for you. I don't know if you know the result or not.
I know the results.
It's so awesome. And with, and I'll just spoil it for everybody out there. If you don't want to hear it, close your ears up very quickly. But Fujiwara defeated Murakami with an armbar that absolutely blew the roof off the crowd. It was so awesome. And it was just really, again, from top to bottom, it's a lot of names that people wouldn't know unless you were really into Japanese pro wrestling. Names like Mako Satomura and Ricky Fuji and guys like that. But a really, really fun show from top to bottom. Wacky at times, but a really cool step back. And I was on Twitter last night watching it, and you could tell all the old Japanese wrestling fans who've been around for a while, who, you know, far predate the glory, current glory days of New Japan Pro Wrestling, who were really marking out and having a great time and really getting a kick out of this show. That from top to bottom really was awesome. And forget about what that guy said earlier on. There was nothing on the show that was negative 5 stars. Because even Kabuki and Kojika going out there, let me tell you something. Kojika got whipped into the corner, takes that corner better than John Cena does.
That ain't saying much.
Well, yeah,
you were doing great
years
till that was your big plug for the show. He took a corner better than John Cena.
Great Kojika is 73 years old. Come on, you got to give him that. I mean, you can do a corner better than somebody who's half your age. Come on now. Now Kojika, though, by the looks, can't squat what John Cena does, but that's okay. Even Kabuki, you know, who's, again, Kabuki's 67 years old. And sometimes on a pro wrestling show, it's not about the match quality. I think that was the thing with the Vianos match that people come down so hard on against the Clowns. And it wasn't, no, the match wasn't good or anything. But look, it was a symbolic match to say goodbye to Viano 3. And should he have been out there? Maybe not or whatever. But fine, look, that's what it is. It's only one part of a show. The greater part, the greater problem was the rest of that show that took place for AAA, where that certainly wasn't the case in this match, where everything really was seemed to be ceremonial except for like a situation when it came to the Suwama and Fujita, who, God knows, they may actually legitimately fight on New Year's Eve. Suwama blew that off after the match, but they legitimately could be fighting on New Year's Eve on one of those three shows that'll be taking place on there. So with the exception of that, everything was ceremonial on this show and was supposed to be fun.
Studio line, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Brian.
Yes.
Well, is it open lines? Can I discuss anything?
Is this Chris?
For the most part, yes, this
Chris
is Chris.
Vegas. Okay, yeah. I you guys were talking about Malenko, and I actually sent a text a few weeks ago. I'm watching, like, old Nitro in 97, and this guy had to be like the most over other than like Steen. It was like he would get this huge pop every time he comes out, and I was actually surprised. Well, I'm not surprised that WCW never did anything with him, but also I wanted to talk about
who is this you're talking about again?
Malenko.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Where have you been, Chris?
Popular
besides Vegas?
I've been. Wait, yeah, I've been in Vegas.
All right, next question. Hello?
Okay, so Bockwinkel passed away, and this is kind of an odd request, but it kind of reminded me what really, really cemented my love for pro wrestling. And believe it or not, it was Lex Luger. And
this call is not what I expected.
No, this is not what you expected at all. And what happened was I was wondering if I could ever email him or write him a letter or if you had any information, because they had a Nitro or
415.
Something like that.
You got a pen?
A
415. I'm kidding. I'm not going to give you his phone number on the air.
Okay. So
isn't he on Twitter?
I have no. I've tried to look him up, but I have not been able to find him.
Let's see how long I can take to find him. Yeah, he's right there on Twitter, Lex Luger.
Okay, well, then I don't have a Twitter, so maybe I need to get...
Well, that's the first thing you got to do is sign up for a Twitter. His Twitter handle is Genuine Lex Luger.
Okay.
Yep. And you can also find him at LexLugerBook.com.
All right, thank you.
He's got a book called Wrestling with the Devil.
Yeah, I've heard about that book, yes.
Yeah.
You want to hear my story?
Yeah.
Or you got Okay, so I was at a going to a Nitro or Clash of the Champions show in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace, and they were like fighting the Nasty Boys at the time. And Lex Luger, one of his promos, said, "Anytime, any place." So there I am walking around Caesar's Palace, and who walked by but Lex Luger and Sting? They were in the shop, and we were just like casually talking. I was only like a little kid. The Nasty Boys walked in, and I said, "Luger, look, it's the Nasty Boys. You said anytime, any place." He looked at me, he looked at them, and he approached them and started fighting, not fighting, but arguing with them in the store. He's like, "If this little kid wasn't here, I'd take you out right now." And they kind of walked off arguing, and then I was cemented a life at that point as a kid. And I was like, wow, Lex Luger, I confronted Lex, and he went up.
You almost got him arrested. Good work there, Chris.
But I thought in the world of kayfabe, when you're a kid like that, that was a pretty big moment for me. So I was pretty excited when I went to the show the next night.
That's awesome. I mean, hey, kayfabe ended and Terry Funk was still going after Dusty Rhodes in airports, for God's sake. So, yeah, I mean, that actually is great. And you always hear negative stories about Lex Luger blowing off a fan for an autograph or this or that. And I think he would be the first one to call himself out, judging what he did to himself and how he may have treated people or how he came across. I think he's got some regret about that, but it's cool to actually hear that. And sometimes, you know, they look, at least he did it for the kids, and that's awesome.
Well, listen, Chris, if you don't have a Twitter, you go to LexLugerBook.com, and down there at the bottom, there's Todd Starowitz's number. That's Lex's publicist. It's got a phone number and an email, and I'll bet she can give you some information about how to contact Lex.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, thanks so much for the call and the story. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here with the final segment of this show, but we got a lot more coming up here today. The Brian and Vinny Show later on tonight, only for subscribers. Ring of Honor, SmackDown, and some matches from the Tenryu Retirement Show, including the tag match with Minoru Suzuki, which I cannot wait for. That's coming up tonight only for subscribers. Also tonight, live at 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, on the Dark Matter Digital Network, it is Sasquatch Night on After Dark Radio. You can listen free on TuneIn Radio. If you use TuneIn Radio to listen to this show, you can use TuneIn Radio to listen to After Dark Radio. Search Dark Matter Digital Network on TuneIn Radio, and you can listen live at 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern tonight as we are joined by three big guests to not only talk about Bigfoot, but the Sasquatch Summit, which is coming up in Washington next Saturday, which I am going to. What could possibly be better than that? That is tonight, so check that out. And, of course, we're here every day, full schedule up at sportsbyline.com. Monday, we'll be here. We'll be here noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, which is our daily scheduled time. Replays every day at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. On Monday, we have a morning replay at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern. All of this up at sportsbyline.com. Got a lot of big guests coming up next week. And, of course, if you need any information on this show or any of the other shows we do, sportsbyline.com is a great place to go, as well as our website, wrestlingobserver.com, where you can sign up. 7,000 shows in the archives, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Figure 4 Weekly, all of this great stuff, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Mike, as always, all the folks at Byline, all of you, the listeners. We'll talk to you again Monday, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network.